This Week in Radio Tech, episode 297, is brought to you by the Axia family of X-Nodes, including the Linear Acoustic SDI X-Node for TV audio with LiveWire and AES67. By the ZipStream R2 hardware, audio processor, and stream encoder. Stream like you mean with ZipStream. And by Lavo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. What's inside a modern TV satellite truck? What audio and video capabilities are likely inside? Who makes sure that satellite antenna on the roof is aimed correctly? And what kind of engineer would configure and operate one of these beasts? Robert Pace, a well-known audio, video, and satellite technician in Nashville, joins us in the TV sat truck for which he's responsible.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. I'm delighted to be here. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, I was in Cancun doing the show. And this week, I got to tell you, I'm like a kid in a candy store. This is amazing. And my guest is Robert Pace. Well, I'll introduce Robert in a minute, but I've known Robert for a long time. And he's going to take us through some of the stuff that is in this truck that we're in, especially some of the audio. Robert has run audio for years and years, and now the guy's, you know, points to shoot satellites out of the sky or something like that. Chris Tobin may join us later in the show. He got called in to do some fancy recording for the Smithsonian Jazz something or other. I'm glad they got Chris doing it. So, Chris, have fun. Hope you can join us by the end of the show sometime. If you can, great. If not, that's all right. Robert will take care of us. So welcome into the show. It's This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything audio from, you know, the stylus to the microphone to the antenna on the top of the tower and everything in between. And today I happened to be at a business here in Nashville, Tennessee that specializes in doing, well, Robert, why don't you tell us, I better introduce Robert here. I'm a terrible host. I do things all out of order. Okay. This is Robert Pace. Robert, I've known Robert for what, 14, 15 years?
You know, the longer that you've known me, the more gray hair I get, and it's starting to fall out on top. So a long time.
So, Robert, I met you doing audio at probably Fox 17 here in Nashville.
That's correct, yeah.
You seem to specialize in getting up real early with that TV station.
Can people call 4 a.m. early? Okay, all right. 4 a.m. Central, because we're worldwide now. So. Yeah. No, I used to get up at 4 a.m., a little TV show in Nashville, a little morning news show. It was more of a magazine-style show, but started out as a one-hour show. Then it grew to a two-hour show, and they said, well, we're here for 2 hours. Let's make it four.
Yeah, they did.
And then things got crazy.
So, but you did audio for the show, and, you know, let's talk about running audio for a typical TV station for just a couple of minutes. Then we'll take a break and come back, and you'll tell us how that TV show was different because you had a lot of live acts as well as the other stuff. Yeah, a lot of complication. Amazing what you guys did. So give us just a little clue as to, you know, most of the engineers and people watching or listening to this show are in the radio business. Okay. And so they're used to running an audio console for the radio business. Well, running a console for TV news, can you tell us how that may be different or what's weird or what's easy or what's difficult about running an audio console for a TV newscast?
Well, I'll tell you what the biggest difference is. For a while, our show was actually simulcast on an AM station here in town, WLAC 1510 News Radio. And, you know, it just seemed like a really simple thing. You know, hey, we got this little TV show. We'll put it on the radio, a little ISDN action. Yeah. Should be real simple. And it was amazing. A lot of the things that we realized were not as easy as we had thought.
Wait, stuff that you do on TV didn't work for radio?
Oh, yeah. We do this whole bit where a guy gets in front of a screen and he points and he says, today, the high temperature is going to be this here and this here and this here. And people at home don't see what he's pointing at, you know. Obvious problem there. So, you know, we knew initially that was going to be an issue.
Or when the anchor person on the TV station says, you're looking live at where the action is this morning.
That's right. You can't see that at home. Yeah. So we went through a little bit of a problem there. We, you know, obviously we got it worked out. Yeah. But I'll tell you what the really strange thing was. I got pulled into the assistant chief's engineer office one day, and he said, Robert, the show sounds terrible. And, of course, I immediately said, no, I'm mixing the show. It sounds fantastic all the time. And, you know, I do have a sense of humor. So what he said, well, let me show you what the problem is. And he said, the radio station sent me an MP3 of today's show, and I'm just going to play it back for you. And I thought, well, MP3, of course, that sounds terrible. Okay. And I'm listening for things like, you know, just very low bandwidth and things like that, because I wasn't really familiar with what ISDN was at the time. Okay. You know, so I got to listen to it, and everything had a terrible echo. You could hear things like phase cancellation and things like this. And I said, well, there's clearly a problem between what we're mixing here and what they're getting back at the radio station. It's the radio station's problem. Make them fix it. And he said, well, no, it's not the radio station. It's us. I said, well, okay. I said, well, I don't understand. He says, think about where you do your television show. I said, well, we do it in the studio. He said, yeah, the studio with a really tall ceiling. I said, okay. And he said, the studio's not small, is it? I said, no, it's a big room. And as I'm starting to process, I'm going, oh, it's the echo in the room.
Yes,
the
yes,
echo
yes.
in the room. And he said, I'll tell you something interesting. He says, I'm going to play this MP3 for you again. Close your eyes and listen to it. And as I'm listening to it, it sounds perfect because I'm in my mind, I'm visualizing two people sitting on a couch, a couple of people sitting at a news desk, whatever. And, and it made sense. And it was only through a very complicated series of compressors and gates and a lot of tweaking that we finally got it to where it sounded better on radio, and it didn't affect the on-air product.
Listen, we're going to explore this topic a bit more because that's a really interesting one, and I think it's terribly interesting. So we'll explore that a bit more and then talk about all the mixing for live shows on a TV morning show. Then we'll get into talking about this truck right here. I'm Kirk Harnack on This Week in Radio Tech, and one of our sponsors is Axia and LiveWire. Now, Axia makes a number of things that we call X-Nodes. X-Nodes are the box, the device, that lets you connect an Axia network to devices that don't have a built-in Ethernet jack and don't have Axia or LiveWire built into them. Things like microphones and speakers and headphones. Maybe you have a Victrola. maybe you have a turntable or a tape deck or something that needs to go into a LiveWire audio over IP network but can't. So what do you use? You use an Axia X node. They're made in several varieties. One variety has microphone inputs. Plug this mic right into it. Others have analog line level inputs and outputs. Others have AES digital inputs and outputs. And here's one that actually doesn't have the Axia name on it. It has the Linear Acoustic brand name on it. And this X node is really interesting. It looks on the front just like the Axia X nodes, but on the back, for those of you who are in radio with maybe an attached TV station, for those of you in TV, it has BNC connectors. And look, I don't know if you can see it or not, but they say SDI1 and SDI2. So what is that for? Well, SDI, Robert, I'm glad you're here. You can help me during the commercial. Can you give me the short elevator speech as to what SDI is?
It's a video signal. It's a digital video signal that, along with video, contains audio tracks as well, up to 16.
And there's, I guess, most SDI nowadays is HD SDI.
Yes.
And you probably don't even say the HD anymore. You say SDI.
We don't. No. Okay. No, we don't.
SDI implies nowadays HD SDI. And tell me about the audio. How many audio tracks can go along with this?
Most gear is 16. Is pretty standard, yeah.
Or 8 stereo or 16?
Yeah, models? Yeah. 8 pairs.
Okay. 8 pairs. I'm not a TV engineer, but I'm given to understand that sometimes the audio that the SDI signal you're receiving from another studio, off a tape machine or off a hard drive, whatever, the audio is not maybe on the tracks that you wanted it to be on. Now, I don't understand why it wouldn't be, but sure. Okay, maybe it's second language. Whatever it is, it's not where you want it.
I have an example if you're interested.
Really?
I do, actually.
Well, we just got another minute, so maybe we'll do that sometime during the show.
Yeah, we'll talk later. Yeah.
So anyway, one thing you can do with this box, this X node, not only does it it takes an SDI digital video and audio signal in, and it strips away the audio. That's one of the first things you have to do with a lot of devices in a TV station nowadays. You got to strip away, separate the audio and video. Then the audio gets turned into live wire audio over IP audio signals. They're packetized with low latency live wire. And then you can keep that audio right here in the box and maybe route them to different channels. There's a whole routing mechanism built in that you access with a web browser. You can reassign channels, duplicate channels, and so forth. Or you can route that audio out of this Ethernet jack and send it off your live wire network. And if you're in radio, you're probably more familiar with live wire than television. But you can route it somewhere around Cisco routers. And hey, eventually TV is going to be going to all IP routing at some point. And so it can use that network. And then you can apply that audio. You can receive it at an audio processor or an audio console. Maybe you're using an Axia audio console at your TV station. Well, easy peasy. You subscribe to that audio somewhere else. You do whatever you have to with it, process it, mix it, whatever, route it back to here, and then it re-embeds that audio with the video as you assign it to. Now, here's the other cool thing. You know, whenever you send that audio all over the place, it's going to get delayed a little bit because it takes time to do stuff. Well, the video never left this box. So we got to have a way to delay the video to still match the audio. And this box will do it. The Axia X-Node, actually, this one's from Linear Acoustic. The Linear Acoustic SDI X-Node will delay the video. And you can totally set that. You can set, I think it's maybe up to a whole second, but there's a fair amount of memory in there to delay that video. Check this out. You can go to the website linearacoustic.com, linearacoustic.com, and check out the SDI X-Node. Hey, if you're in radio and you don't need video, no problem. Check it out at telosalliance.com, telosalliance.com, and look at the other X-Nodes in the whole line of X-Nodes. Really useful, useful equipment. All right. Thanks to Axia and Linear Acoustic for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right. Back to this problem with audio. And I, you know, I've heard this before. Sometimes a radio station, well, like at my radio station in Mississippi, we have a television in the control room. Audio comes out of it. It's available on the console. So if all heck breaks loose and we got to put on some news that's only conveniently available on the television, we can do that. But television, in television, you tend to pay attention to different things in the audio than you do in radio, right?
Yeah.
And in television, you always have the image there. So if there's some echo, you're when you can see where the audio is coming from, your brain tunes out some anomalies that are in the audio. In radio, you don't have that, and your brain catches everything. So to mitigate this echo, I noticed at some point there was more baffling put in the ceiling at Fox 17.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first thing we did was try to eliminate the echo actually physically in the room, but that only went so far.
So then you use some gating to if the audio wasn't high enough, it would knock it down.
Yeah, and you know the only issue that you ever run into there is your guests, you know, who are not real super TV savvy. You know, they tend to, you know, they talk really low, or maybe they talk really loud, and then sometimes you don't know what they're talking about, and so the volume is an issue there. So you have to manually ride those. But for the people that are very in the business, they know you speak very loudly, you speak very clearly. So it was very easy for our host just to set, you know, a gate that only opened when they talk. And, you know, because after a while, you just get to know people's voice and you kind of get a sense for how they talk. So it's real easy, you know, if you are having some problems and you need to make some manual adjustment. But the gates and the compressors really fixed a lot of our problems.
Yeah, yeah. So you wanted to clear out anything that wasn't voice, so that didn't get sent on to WLAC.
Right, because at any point you have a host and a co-host, and then you have at least one guest. Now, in our situation, a lot of times we would have a band on, so you have a host and a co-host, and then you may have six people sitting on the couch. All of those guys have microphones as well, and I mean, any little piece of noise in the room, you know, go straight to radio.
Now, and also radio, I mean, look, in radio, they do a lot more compression and limiting typically than television does.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's a good thing, but most stations do it for loudness.
Sure.
Now, on that morning, they don't do it anymore on that morning show. They have a few musical interviews now and then, but they used to have bands come in. I mean, country bands, rock bands.
Yep.
People dancing on the floors, crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you mic this stuff and how'd you mix it? Was there a separate mixer for the band?
Well, now that I'm not on the show or with the station anymore, I can tell you what the secret there was. I mixed for broadcast. I mixed the show. And then I had another guy mix the bands on a separate console.
Ah, okay. So he would send you a broadcast-worthy feed.
Sure. Yeah, just a stereo mix. Out of his console. And then what the good thing there is that frees him up to, he only focuses on the band. So while we're live on the air, you know, you guys at home are watching a news story about, you know, the chicken that crossed the road. While you guys are a minute and a half watching this story, it was not uncommon for us to be checking the band live in the studio.
Sure, yeah.
And you guys would never know that at home. And then
when I used to do that morning show, I remember bands coming in tiptoeing quietly. I mean, 30 people sometimes tiptoeing.
Oh, yeah.
Past the cameras.
Yeah.
And that was back when they only had three cameras, sometimes only two.
Yep.
And it was a trick.
I'm telling you, there's a lot of magic to TV. If you're not in the business, and I'm not suggesting anybody get out of radio and go to TV. You know, but yeah, there's a lot of magic there, and it's cool. You know, a friend of mine used to always say that television is just radio with pictures. And when you start telling these stories about all the shenanigans that we pulled, because we weren't always working behind the scenes. Don't let anybody kid you. It really is. It's a lot more magical than it sounds.
You know, one of the things that I found out in television, and you were responsible for some of this, and I think your partner in crime, Brian Smith, was responsible.
And we'll get you some therapy.
in radio, let's say you're a disc jockey on the radio, and you're working at a top 40 station. I'm thinking back in the 70s and 80s when I was a disc jockey on the radio. Well, you know, we had music, and that kind of kept us pumped up. Yeah, once in a while there'd be a slow song, a love song, a ballad.
Sure.
But there's a lot of, you know, good toe-tapping music to kind of keep you excited. In television, you don't have that. However, I mean, in television news, you don't really have that. However, you and some of your colleagues, during the commercial break, so it's quiet in the newsroom during the commercial break, you guys piped in some toe-tapping, hip-jamming music to kind of wake everybody up.
Well, again, it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and you know, coffee is a great thing. And I won't mention, you know, I know that people have to pay for ads, but there's a company in town that sells coffee. It's has to do something with the stars. I can't think of what the name is. But, you know, that stuff only does so much. And, you know, you can only drink so much Red Bull before you just go insane. So, yeah, we used to do that. And, you know, the situation we have there is you have a master control that's really deciding what you at home see on live on the air. So when you see the news, that's us in the control room. When you're watching commercials, who knows what may be going on in the studio.
All right. So we've talked about mixing audio for news and the problems you have when you feed a radio station, because it is different, and live bands on the air. Now, was there a time, I don't remember exactly how long you were at Fox 17, but there was a time they built a new studio. They went HD, a lot of cameras, and the audio mixing became automated in there. Obviously, there's a console there, but there's nobody sitting at it.
Right.
And for the first few months, there were a lot of little, I won't say big disasters, but there were small disasters, a lot of them, when people's mics wouldn't be open. Yep. And I got, now the people who wrote that software, I guess I shouldn't say the name, but they were great. I mean, they actually came in.
Sure.
They recognized the issues. They came in, and there were a few things that probably they were the employees may have been using some of the scripting wrong, but then also the company that wrote the software, you know, recognized a few issues. Anyway, tell me your thoughts about automating audio like that. I mean, obviously, it saves the TV station a lot of money.
Sure.
I think they finally generally got it to work well. There's occasionally the weirdness, and you don't have the flexibility. Hey, everybody wants to talk now. Well, sure. Everybody can't talk right now. What are your thoughts on automated mixing?
You have to be careful with it. It's a tricky thing. You know, when I'm sitting behind a console, if something happens, I can fix it because I'm watching the show and I'm reacting to it. When a computer is watching watching the board,
yeah,
it's doing what you tell it to do. And a lot of the problems that you described actually were programming error. And it's, you know, gosh, I wish I knew more about radio automation right now. But in television, it's a little bit more of a computer script that you copy and paste, yeah, into your automation software.
Well, in radio automation, you don't program when the mic is open or not.
Oh, okay.
Now you do maybe have voice tracks, so the automation will play a voice track. But in TV automation, when you're automating a news show, you know, you come to the end of a package, and at some point you open one or both of the anchor's mics.
Right.
And then you have to be sure to close those mics at some point. And it's just one of the weird little things that was still going on 2 years after installation of all this, whenever they would do a bump shot, that's when they have, you know, a camera way up high, typically in the studio, and it's a wide angle lens looking at, giving you a, like an overview of the studio. You see the cameras, you see the floor director, you see the green screen, you see the sports, you see everything. And the director would remind us, we're coming up to a bump shot. Remember, all mics are live during the bump shot. All mics are live during the bump shot. And so I'm thinking, you know, that's probably something they can unprogram from the automation, but somebody has to take their time to figure that out and then tell everybody else so that the next time it gets copy-pasted,
sure,
it's right.
Right. And what you're working with there is, it sounds like, to describe it, it sounds like a lazy problem, but I can tell you it's really and truly just not having that kind of time to customize things. And that's where it's nice to have somebody sitting behind the audio console that can reach up and grab a mic. Because typically what happens is the producer in the newsroom is putting together a show in what we call a rundown. It's just, you know, basically this story, this bump shot, this. And then as a director, you copy and paste. Okay, well, when we're going to run this story, I want it to be this piece of video. I want it to have this kind of audio, and this is going to be the trigger for it. But before that happens, I want this animation to come in, and that's another trigger.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so it's just a lot of triggers. And what happens is you just copy and paste. We have a template that says, when I come up to camera two, I want it to be shot number 7, which is a two-shot, you know, like this would be, Mike. And then I want you to open mics 1 and 2 and set them to, you know, 0 dB or whatever. And the computer says, great, I'll do that. And then when you push the trigger button, it does those things. Now, if your co-host, I'm sorry, I'm the co-host.
Yeah,
you're the host, I'm the co-host.
Whichever.
When one of us isn't here and you forget to turn that off, that mic is still laying on the desk, or maybe it's laying on the floor, or maybe it happens to be sitting off to the side out of the camera shot enough to where me as the floor director can be standing there going, you know, gee, I, you know, such a boring story. But that mic is live, and that's the kind of stuff you have to be careful with.
Wow.
Okay, well, tell you what, you're no longer in that world of television automated news.
Right? Some people would say that's a good thing.
So, by the way, you did a lot of live remote shots, right?
Oh, yeah.
Handle a lot of cameras?
Usually just one, but every once in a while we would do it. We would be in a situation where we have two cameras.
Okay, but I mean, you would handle cameras.
Right? Oh, yeah.
You were a photog, too.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You're doing everything out there. So I want to, let's see what time it is here. Okay, we got before we take our next break, we got a couple more minutes. So right now we're in a truck, and you have a good sense of probably what you should or shouldn't say. Your boss, the owner of this company, TNDV, was very kind on short notice, letting me do the show from here and giving me an hour of your time. And his name is Nick. And Nick, I appreciate that very much. And I appreciate your consideration for that. So tell us a little bit about this company, TNDV. I think it's fascinating what you guys do. And then after the break, we're going to take a little tour of some parts of this truck. Probably mostly whatever's behind us. Yeah. So tell us about TNDV.
TNDV Television is the company that I work for. We have a couple of video trucks.
A couple.
We have a few.
We got a half dozen trucks. Go to the website, tndv.com, and you can see these gorgeous, gorgeous trucks. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm not sure how proud of it I can be without just sounding like I'm kissing up, but I got to tell you, our trucks are pretty cool. They're good stuff. We have three television production trucks. I'm sorry, we have four, and they do just general television production. Then we have two specialty trucks. The one that we're in now, this is my satellite uplink truck. It's TNDV satellite. I
hear you.
I love my baby. You don't understand. I love my baby.
You've slept in this baby.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, that's how dedicated this. Okay.
Well, it's no hotel room. I mean, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
So four production. By the way, any one of these production trucks, what sort of television show could any one of them produce? A AAA baseball game? An award show?
Sure.
Okay.
You keep routing them off, and I'm going to say yes every time.
Do you think you're at liberty can you name a show or two that people might have seen on television that was produced out of one of those trucks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now you've put me on the spot. So we've done several. The Stellar Awards is a show that aired recently that just immediately comes to mind. The Emmy Award-winning Bluegrass Underground is a show that, that we do in conjunction with another production team here in town. But our trucks are designed to be pretty much whatever you need. We can do everything. We can do things from little bitty shows to great big shows. And, you know, and this is that, that liberty to say, we might be working on a killer truck, a huge killer truck that's going to just be absolutely the best you've ever seen.
Years and years ago, when I lived near Lexington, Kentucky, one of the TV stations had a truck that they called the MDB. The MDB. Of course, on the tour, we had to ask, well, what does MDB stand for? Now, remember, this was 34 years ago. I was probably 20.
I was three.
34 years ago, MDB stood for Million Dollar Baby. I got to believe these trucks may be a little bit more than $1 million nowadays.
A little bit. A little bit. He doesn't want me to tell.
No, that's right. Okay. Now, these trucks, when TNDV is hired to provide a truck, does TNDV typically provide the production crew as well, or are they is the truck rented by a company that already has a production crew?
It's actually either way. We're fully capable of hiring in crew. A lot of shows come to us with crew already in mind. But we work with a lot of clients. We have a lot of repeat business, and you know they just say, you know, hey, that show that we did last year, we're going to do it again. I want the same people.
Tell you what, before we go to break, something you said earlier today was pretty interesting, and that is that you were part of your job was prepping a truck for a particular job or show or function, and the truck may stay in that configuration for a long time, or it may come back and you got to do something different with it because of what the client needs. What are some of the things that you might find yourself doing to a truck in preparation for its next job?
Most always, it's just the number of cameras that it has on board at any given time.
Okay. Now, there are no cameras in here because this truck will handle cameras, right?
It will. Yeah. Okay. It's wired up for four cameras right now.
Okay.
And then all of our trucks have, you know, different, you know, all our trucks are different sizes and they're pre-wired to handle certain numbers of cameras.
Okay.
And then we load them, you know, accordingly. Our new truck that we might be building is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe is 20 cameras.
Holy cow.
Well, we're not kidding around with this truck.
Oh my goodness. 20 cameras. That's a lot of SDI coming in.
That's a whole lot of SDI because each camera provides three HD SDI outs.
By the way, in this, with the kind of cameras that you might use, are these cameras that have to be shaded remotely in the truck?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, and obviously you can't see it at home, I'm just going to point to the camera like you can.
Yeah.
I'm really not good at this. I'm starting to realize. But yeah, each one of our stations has a remote control panel, and we can adjust every single aspect of the camera: red, green, blue balance, you know, iris, open, close, bright or dark, black levels, you know, whatever.
And so these are all professional cameras, aren't they?
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
All right, cool. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack along with Robert Pace. We're here in a satellite uplink truck, and we'll start getting a tour here in a few minutes on This Week in Radio Tech. Our next sponsor that I want to tell you about, I believe, is ZipStream. The ZipStream R2 is a fantastic new, brand new appliance from the folks at ZipStream. Now, that's a division of Telos. Tell you what, let's keep the picture on that ZipStream for a while I talk about it here. That box is one rack unit, one RU, and what it does is it's amazing. So let's say that you have a cluster of radio stations, or you're you're doing web broadcasting only. Either way, you can bring up to 8 programs into this box, the ZipStream R2. 8 stereo programs can come in either by AES Digital or by LiveWire. So 8 up to 8 come in, and you license these individually. The ZipStream R2 comes in a minimum configuration with 2 inputs. You can license up to 6 more inputs to handle those. So what are you doing with them once they're in the box? Well, each one of these inputs can be audio processed in numerous different ways, and each audio input can be encoded for streaming in numerous different ways. So you could take one audio input. Let's say that you own, I don't know, TNDV radio, okay? There is no such thing, so we'll use that as an example.
Not yet.
TNDV radio, audio comes in. You can, let's say that you want to make a shoutcast stream at a high bit rate, maybe 256 kilobits per second, and a low bit rate, maybe 96 kilobits per second. Well, you can do that. You have and you want different processing for each of those encoders because, you know, they're different encoders. So you can do two processors, two encoders, and from each of those encoders, you can send to one or multiple CDNs or servers anywhere in the world. And so you have audio processing for each input and for each stream you make. You have stream encoding for each stream you make. You have MP3, AAC, high-efficiency AAC, HEAAC V2, and even the brand new XHEAAC, extended high-efficiency AAC, the newest codec from Fraunhofer. It's in the box. It's in the new ZipStream R2. From there, once you've encoded it, well, you can send it out to different types of servers. Shoutcast is built in as a stream type, so it'll be the proper stream for a Shoutcast server. Icecast is there. RTMP streams are in there. You can send to a Wowza server, so they can turn that into multiple different bit rates for you and do all kinds of helpful stuff. You can also send it to an Adobe Flash server. One more server type is in there. This is cool, and it's brand new, and that is Apple HLS. You can do adaptive multi-rate streaming with the ZipStream R2. You can set the different bit rates that you're going to produce. It makes little files. The files get automatically either served locally inside the machine or sent off automatically. Hey, I've run through a whole lot of information there real quick. And you know what? If you want to do streaming in different ways to meet all your listeners' needs, to make it easy for them to hear your stream, well, you know, you kind of need to do your homework on your end. You need to provide the stream types that they're going to be able to pick up. And the ZipStream R2 can absolutely do that for you. And it's an appliance. It's not a PC that you have to take care of. It's a streaming appliance. Check it out, if you would, on the website at telosalliance.com and look for the ZipStream R2. Hey, there's already some out there. They were in beta test for a while, and now it's being shipped. Thanks a lot to ZipStream for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Okay, Robert, thanks for standing by with us here. And let's see, what were we going to... Oh, yeah, audio. So I know it's a TV truck.
Sure.
But let's talk for a minute about audio. What is now? This is meant to be an uplink truck.
Yeah.
But you've got some video switching capability.
I do.
What kind of audio capability would you typically also put in a truck like this to handle the things it might want to go do?
Well, getting back to the story I was going to tell you about the HD-SDI thing, it's not uncommon for. I mean, there's so many different applications for a satellite truck. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just we have to break it down by configuration. Let's talk about if we were going to broadcast a concert. Okay. So what would happen is the production truck would send me HD-SDI, would be their finished program, you know, video switches and the cuts and cameras and everything. And then on that, embedded, would be two channels of audio, a left and a right. And then if we were doing a surround mix, you know, you'd have up to, eight channels of audio.
Right.
And then I would get all that, you know, via the HD-SDI line from the truck. Well, in a situation where we're doing maybe a soccer game, which we've done here, we got our audio. We got the international feed, which was the effects mic, so that the soccer, you know, you hear all the kicking of the ball and people, you know, roughhousing and everything. You get all of that, and you're getting their cuts. What we did in our version, we did the Spanish feed of the game.
Oh.
So we had our own host speaking Spanish, obviously. So we got the effects from the host truck.
Ah.
And then we, you know, put our audio on top of that.
So are you saying that the other truck you were getting the video and the effects from,
right,
were their hosts there doing the English version?
Right. Yeah.
But you didn't want the English version.
No, we don't need.
You
that.
Just wanted the same background noises.
Right.
And
yeah.
And your own Spanish host to add in, layer in on that.
That's right.
Oh,
that's right.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah. So we basically got in television we call it a clean and a dirty program.
Yeah.
So we got a clean. We took a clean version, which was the show the way you saw it at home, but the only audio that we got was all the mics that they have around the stadium. And then in this truck, I had from Mexico an ISDN line that was bringing me the hosts that were back in Mexico watching the game.
Well, they weren't even there.
They weren't even here with us. They weren't even here with us. And another time, we actually did have hosts up in a box.
Yeah.
So, in here, we're making our own program. In here, just like they would be at the production truck.
So even though this satellite truck is capable of doing some video work and some audio work, typically a much more typical application would be just final layering of a couple things together that were meant for that satellite feed.
Right.
So that's why you've got some production gear in here.
Sure.
Although this production switch, it looks like you could do a few more things with it.
Well, and I actually could make a show, just not on as big a scale as you know, a production truck with, you know, three rooms and racks of gear.
Now one of your big trucks, maybe a truck that hasn't been built yet, or maybe one that you do have. What's the biggest audio console? What would be some of its, you know, featured capabilities?
They do a lot with Maddie streams and stuff like that. Gosh, I don't work on those trucks, so I'm not sure what they're.
So, but they're all surround capable, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and you know, hundreds of channels of audio.
Wow. So and they'll, when they bring, maybe you don't know the answer to this. When they bring mic feeds in, like let's say that the truck is parked at a stadium, and they want to bring, you know, sound effect mics in. They got maybe a reporter on the field. You got a bunch of mics coming in. Are those all analog runs coming from mics, or are there boxes and amplifiers? Are there converters to digital? How does that – what does it look like coming into the truck itself?
So there's two different ways that we can handle that situation. Most of the time in a concert situation, we're talking, you know, lots and lots of audio. We have a stage box that it's a rack with wheels on it, and we take that into the venue, and then the sound company that's mixing for the house mix will give us our own split. And then that way we can mix our version of the show, because what you hear in the house, just like we talked about the radio versus television audio, is not the same thing that you want at home, you know. Because in the venue, you know, like the drums are going to be way louder. If you have the same mix at home, all you're going to hear is the drums. So, you know, you need to be able to provide your own mix. So what would happen is we would drop our stage box, get our own version of the audio, and then over what we call tactical fiber, all of that gets muxed into a fiber signal and sent back to the TV truck.
Okay. And over the fiber, do you know, is that an AES standard, or is that a fiber version of Maddie, perhaps?
Yeah, I believe it's a fiber version of Maddie.
Okay. Wow. Someday, that'll all be on IP and television, too. You can't avoid it.
It's happening.
All right. Well, so can you give us some tour? I am interested in the uplink gear. I'm going to try to bring the camera over. Let me switch my monitor a bit here. So I can see myself bigger. Okay, what would you like to show us first? And I got to bring the audio box over here a little closer. What would you like to show us or tell us about what we're looking at here? And I don't care where you start.
Okay. All right. Well, so what we have here, this is, you know, all this is all pretty much standard, you know, satellite stuff. I'll tell you what, we'll just start from where the video comes into the truck.
Okay.
So over here, the video would come in, and then this is our switcher. We would choose what source of video that you see at home. And this truck right now is currently configured in a news configuration. So what would happen is I would be able to switch between my color bars up here and an incoming camera signal. And the switcher is able to switch the embedded audio as well. So I can literally go from bars to my camera signal, which would have my reporter via embedded audio from his camera line coming in, and I basically don't switch any audio at all other than what I do through the switcher. So from here, we would come over to here, and these are our encoders. We have MPEG-4 and MPEG-2 encoding capabilities here. That takes the video signal and turns it into an ASI stream. Some of these boxes have modulators that take that ASI data stream and turn them into RF, and what happens then, it would go over here to our up converters, which is the very top two things right here. And what that does is that takes the RF and turns it into an actual satellite signal, which is in frequency terminology, it's 14 gigahertz up and 11 to 12 gigahertz down. KU band. And then so from there, it comes down here to our amplifiers. And that gives me the ability to turn the volume of the signal up or down, depending on if I was, like today, it happens to be stormy here in Nashville, so I would have to crank the satellite signal a little harder to actually get to the satellite, which is 22,000 miles away.
If you turn up too much, does it push the satellite farther out in space?
You can't. Well, it doesn't. Yeah. You're tricky like that. You can overdrive a satellite, and I have spectrum monitors and stuff that tell me if I'm in danger of that. And then also whenever I do, we call it accessing a satellite. When I call the satellite company, they'll tell me raise, lower your power. And that's just so that you play fairly with everybody else. I don't knock anyone else off.
So when you are beginning a satellite feed, you go somewhere, you set the dish up, you get ready to turn things on, you've got to be talking to the company that owns this, that's managing the satellite, right?
Right, absolutely. So what will happen is I'll call up and I'll say, you know, this is Robert with TNDV. I have space booked on, you know, whatever satellite, whatever transponder. And they look it up and they say, you know, okay, yeah. And then we verify all the frequency information, because the last thing that you want to do is transmit on top of somebody else and knock them off the satellite, which has happened to us before. And then so they watch me transmit to the bird, and they can tell if my polarity needs to change plus or minus and things like that. And all that is just to ensure that we have a solid signal going to the satellite and a return signal back to Earth.
Talk to me. Unfortunately, we can't go outside, but talk to me about aiming the dish that's up there. It's an offset feed dish, so it's not a prime focus. So it stands up almost vertically. Not, it leans back a little bit. So what's your process for aiming?
So what happens is there are several satellite programs that you can get for your phone and whatever else. I use a web service just to get my primary focus. A lot, you know, just give me an idea of where I need to start. And then all the satellites are in an arc around the Earth.
Sure.
And they're all 2 degrees apart. And then what happens is I raise the dish until I find one of them. I lock it in and determine which satellite it is.
Do they all have beacons that help you determine which one they are?
Some do. What a lot of people will use is we all know one station on each satellite we know is always going to be there. And then, like, as for instance, I have a satellite feed where I'm going two Tuesdays from now, and I'll be on Galaxy 17, which is 91 degrees west. And when I get to the venue, the first thing I'll do is I'll locate the arc, and then I will scan around until I find ABC News Channel, which I know is on Galaxy 17.
Gotcha. Hey, now, when you're scanning around, that satellite dish on the roof of this truck, is it motorized, or do you have to get up there and crank it around yourself?
We certainly hope I don't have to get up there and crank it, but we do have that capability.
Okay.
It's all part of the redundancy. I have controls in here, and the first thing is I'll do is I'll raise the elevation or the tilt up and down, and then once I find the arc, I'll adjust the azimuth or pan left and right. And then once I find the satellite, I might need to turn my feed just a little bit one direction or another just to make sure, because we're basically working with a big mirror. I send a satellite signal up, it bounces it back down to Earth. And if I'm a little, you know, to the right or something, it makes it not tune in correctly.
So have you ever been driving down the road and just remembered that you left the satellite dish up?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. And I'm going to tell you something. With a 2.4 meter dish on your roof, it's big.
Is that about 8 feet tall?
Yeah, about
7 or 8 feet. So normally it's down like this.
Right.
It's very aerodynamic.
Uh-huh.
It's not a problem, and it won't run into. It's not taller than anything else on the truck.
Right.
But when it's up, you don't want to be driving around through the McDonald's drive-thru, do you?
You don't. You don't want to be driving through a hotel parking lot, which I've heard stories of people doing that before. But obviously you don't drive with the dish up because you smack power lines and bridges and overpasses and things like that. And it makes for a very awkward phone call to your boss.
Okay. So now when you go do it, obviously when you take the satellite uplink truck somewhere, it's because you're going to bounce it back to wherever it's going by satellite. What are some of the other technologies available to people producing TV shows to get their show back to a network or wherever it's going? Isn't there something called Vivix? Aren't there other ways to get this done?
Yep. There's fiber. It's out there. We don't talk a whole lot about it.
Oh, okay. Because that's a competitor to what you guys do.
A little bit.
But if somebody hires you, hey, give me your output and we're hiring your truck.
And I'll tell you, the way that I look at all of that stuff, here's the thing. It's redundancy is the key to anything good. I don't have one of anything in this truck for the very specific reason that if something in this truck dies, I need a backup plan.
Yeah.
Transmission of any kind of major live event never has one satellite truck. It always has two. And a lot of times there is a fiber backup because just like storms can knock me offline, the guy down the street digging ditches with his bulldozer can put his bucket through a fiber line. And I can't tell you how many times with the growing city of Nashville that happens.
Hey, I got a program note I need to send back to Suncast right now. Suncast, for our next upcoming commercial, the folks at Lavo, I wonder if we might, instead of me talking about it, if we might play a moment or a few moments of Mike Dosh describing the console. That would give me a little bit of a break that I really hadn't thought about. So if you could cue that up from their website, which you probably already have ready anyway, that would be terrific. If you can't do that, just let me know, and I'll go ahead and do the commercial myself. All right? Thanks. All right. So I had to have to give myself a break here. I brought a bottle of water, and you know, if I'm on for an hour, I got no time to drink anything.
Oh, and he brought me a bottle of water, too.
Same for you, too. I've kept you busy the whole time. So I see a Sony panel here in the truck. It's off camera right now. I guess we could turn the camera.
No need to move.
Oh, wait. What?
No need to move.
What?
Use my little magic arm abilities here.
Okay.
And I can bring it out here to us.
What is this thing?
So this is the brains behind the switcher. What input is on what?
This is a switcher for the switcher?
It's a switcher for the switcher. It's a computer that runs the switcher. Okay. From this panel, I can do things like change which input goes to which button, and I can change white patterns, you know.
You wouldn't do those kind of things from this itself, because this is for the operator to punch and use.
Right.
And it's not for programming. You program it separately.
Right, yeah. I would use this to program, like I said, you know, what goes where on the switcher. Some people, and it's odd how everybody is, you know, it's just like people mix shows differently. I punch shows differently than a lot of people. My first button on my switcher is always black, because I need a button that I can hit in an emergency to just get me off the air. A lot of directors don't like that. So instead of the first button being black, they'll make it camera one. From this panel.
Imagine if we did television like we do radio. Button number one would be a microphone and a camera on me. We don't do that in television.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of jokes there. There's a lot of jokes
there. I'm sure.
But anyway, and then this switcher, obviously, it does a lot of neat things with DVE boxes and things like that. Anytime you see the two boxes on
digital side. Video effects. Whew, pass that test.
Boy, I'm glad I thought about it, too. You know, it's funny that you asked about things like that, because I go, you know, I know what that term does.
Right.
But, you know, in the heat of the moment, because I'm not used to being on camera, you know, I'm usually on the other side, I start thinking about what I'm saying out loud, and it's like, oh, gosh, I hope he remembers what that is. But anyway, you know, and then this you know, I select, like, my wipe patterns and stuff. I'm a big fan of the star wipe. I love a good star wipe in a show.
Okay.
And he's laughing because he knows what a joke that really is. Oh, yeah, yeah. But
reminds me of Laugh-In from the 70s, right? They probably used a lot of star wipes on Laugh-In.
I'm sure they used a lot of different kinds of wipes. Yeah. I do have a star wipe, though. If you need to, you know, if your show needs a satellite uplink and you need a star wipe, I'm your guy. You just give us a call. We'll work something out. I guarantee you.
All right. Well, cool.
But that's what this panel does, and we have it on this cool moving arm, because if you're really short like I am, I need it down here. Yeah. But for most normal people, they need it about up in here somewhere.
There's a button here called shutdown. Can I push that?
When we're done, sure, absolutely. I'll let you push the buttons.
Now, up above your head, there's a panel that we haven't gotten a chance to look at yet, and I'd kind of like to rearrange my camera here to have a look at that. It looks pretty important. Right above your head there. We got the camera just about there. Okay. Tell me about it.
Well, this is our breaker panel. This is what turns everything on and off. So all the racks in here, you know, we're drawing, well, I'll tell you. Right now we're drawing 13 amps on one leg of our power, and we're drawing 18 amps on the other leg of our power. All these switches here, these are just circuit breakers. You have these in your house. They're just not white switches up and down. Yours at home have a 15 or a 20, and they're black and in a panel that's more up and down instead of rows across.
Cool. Now, I did see in one of your garage bays, I noticed a trailer that looked like a generator.
Yeah.
Do you have a generator you can carry along?
We have a generator that we can move around. We also, two of our trucks, this truck and one of our production trucks, have generators on board as well.
Oh, really? So you could run this on generator power if you wanted to run the run the engine.
Yeah, and when I'm out doing my news applications, they tend not to have a whole lot of power just sitting on the side of the road for me to plug into.
So
we have a generator on this truck. One of our production trucks has a generator as well.
So I got to ask you about the truck. This is a big, beefy truck. And I was we were talking earlier about how stable it is. So, I guess we better reset the camera. You know, when I got to be cameraman and director, at least I'm not, you know, the producer. We got that back in New York. It seems really stable, but you were telling me that, Kirk, right now it's as unstable as it's going to be because it's actually sitting on airbags right now. Tell me about a truck like this and its stuff you have to deal with.
Sure.
How does it work?
So one of the big things when you're doing satellite, you know, satellites, like I said, they're 22,000 miles away. They're not close. And you've got to be focused on them, and you've got to be right on it.
And not moving around.
Absolutely. If you're moving around, you're going to miss. You're going to fall. We call it falling off the bird. And your power goes up and down, and then your station receiving you loses your signal, and then that causes a whole host of problems as well. Especially if you're live on the air, that's not a good thing. So just as part of this truck's suspension going down the road, it has airbags in the back. And then when I get
not airbags that hit you in the face if you have a wreck.
Right.
These
right.
are airbags that are in the suspension.
Correct.
I think I've seen those on some trucks. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're pressurized by what? Something in the compressor in the motor?
Yep. It's an air compressor attached to the motor.
Okay.
And then as I go down the road, most people would have springs. I have big bags of air.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I get to a location, the first thing I'll do is dump the air. It's another term. And then that basically puts the truck, it deflates the airbags. The truck literally sits on the axle. And the only moving around then you have is the little bit of air that's in the tires, which is not a whole lot. But, you know, if you're a big guy like me, yeah, you can see that lower half. Getting in and out of the truck, you're going to shake the truck. And it is enough to cause problems.
It's enough to move the satellite dish off the bird, huh?
It is, absolutely. Because, you know, when you're talking about, you know, satellites, you're talking about the difference between 1 degree and another degree, and it's minute at this level.
Gotcha.
So it doesn't take much. So
how do you stabilize the truck at that point?
So this truck has 4 stabilizing feet, hydraulic jack feet. Okay. And then I just set them down on the ground, and they're actually physically attached to the frame. And I can actually lift the truck up off of the axle and take it, you know, and just be as solid gets with 4 posts under the truck.
And now you can jump on and off the truck, and it doesn't move the truck.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Wow. This sounds like, I mean, this sounds like a playtime for a lot of guys. A lot of guys with, you know, antennas that move around. Yeah. Jacks that come out of the truck. It sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a hoot. It's an absolute blast, and I absolutely love my job. Not because the owner of the company's watching, but because I really do love my job. You know, and it's all great as long as everything works.
But you have a lot of backups.
I do, and because I need my life to be happy, I make sure that I have lots of backups. You know, you never carry one cable; you carry 6.
Yes.
Because one can get broken, another one can get stepped on, and then the third one has the connector ripped off of it.
Well, here's how. I needed a longer USB cable for my audio box. It's on the floor here. That's why I'm looking down and pointing to the floor. And I didn't have a long enough cable. Guess who did? Yeah, he did. And he won't let me leave with it. I got to leave it here. Hey, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech with Kirk Harnack and my guest Robert Pace. We are at TNDV in Nashville, Tennessee. You can check them out at TNDV.com. Beautiful pictures and just absolutely gorgeous trucks that they operate that do remote television production. And we're in their satellite truck right here. We've been talking audio and uplinking and video and such. We got our final part of the show is coming up, including... We're going to see if we can have Robert figure out a tip, something that he has learned in the last few weeks, few months that would be valuable to you, too. So we'll check that out in just a minute. I'm Kirk Harnack. Let's hear from our folks at Lavo and the Crystal Clear console. Here's Mike Dosh.
This is Crystal Clear. This is a PC program that acts as a control surface to replace a physical control surface in a radio environment. It's a full-function radio console, essentially on a big screen tablet-type computer. This is an all-in-one PC. It's generic. It's this particular one is Lenovo. You can use an HP. It doesn't really matter. The software is expecting some kind of a touchscreen computer, and this particular one will do 5 simultaneous touches. So you could actually move multiple faders at the same time with a touchscreen like this. We looked at the emergence of touchscreen computers as an opportunity to maybe change the way we build interfaces in the radio console. So Crystal Clear is maybe the first of several different ideas that we've got for how to approach radio in a new way. And a lot of customers are very excited about this. So let's take a look at some of the features here. It looks familiar. We've got fader channels and faders. In this particular case, we've got sources that we've configured, microphones. We've got network audio inputs. We've got telephones. And we've got codecs. And all of these are available to the user all at the same time to make a radio show. We have a monitor section. So this is going to control our loudspeakers. We have headphones. We can talk to our studio guests, for example. Maybe we have people in the other room in front of microphones. They've got headphones on. I can talk to them. Essentially, it's a full-function radio control surface that is controlling our Crystal engine and making all of the mixes and the DSP. Let's take a look at some of the deeper features. If we go underneath a fader channel, for example, it brings up a block diagram to show us what that fader channel is doing behind the scenes. We have output assignments like program 1, program 2, and a record bus. And then we have a couple of interesting functions. One of them is called auto gain. And this is something that's new, and it's unique to Lavo. If we push this button, we can now speak into a microphone. And as we speak, the microphone gain will be adjusted, and it will automatically be leveled to the appropriate level for this particular show. We can do that for the host. We can do it for guests. It's not uncommon for a guest to be a little mic shy at the beginning of a show. So even in the midst of a show, we could open this up and we could push it and we could adjust it for the more exuberant guest who becomes more confident during the course of the show. Auto mix is another feature that's unique to Lavo consoles. Auto mix, if we select it here, this channel now becomes part of a group that can automatically set levels depending on what it is that we wish to do. Now, this might be useful for, let's say we're running a talk show, and we want the host to always talk down the guests. So if the host starts talking and the guests are talking at the same time, maybe we want the host to be a little bit louder and the guest to duck down during that time. Well, this can all be set up during auto mix. Another application for it is setting the audio levels automatically for making a donut for a radio commercial. So we have a bit of music, a music bed. We start speaking over the top of it. Auto mix ducks down the music, lets me speak, calibrates all the levels, and then when I'm done speaking, it naturally brings the music back up, and I've just produced a commercial without ever having
to touch
a fader.
As you might imagine, that's Mike Dosh there.
This is a powerful.
The director of virtual radio projects for Lavo, and they've got some amazing technology. You can go see them at the NAB show this year. Lavo will be there. You know, they make a lot of big audio consoles, a lot of times in big trucks, and they have a line of consoles called Crystal Clear, and that's what Mike Dosh was telling you about. You can check them out at Lavo, LAWO.com, LAWO.com. Look for the Crystal Clear under the radio products link there at Lavo.com. And thanks to Lavo for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Kirk Harnack, episode 297 of This Week in Radio Tech. We're here with Robert Pace at TNDV, and we're in a satellite truck just about to wrap things up. Robert, we were just talking during the break about cables. You know, a lot of broadcast engineers, some enjoy making cables, some don't. You guys make a lot of cables. You looked like you were working on 100 of them while I walk through your garage.
Well, we don't actually make a lot of cables. We make all of our cables.
Okay.
We make all of our cables. As far as a tip, what I can tell you, you know, I used to make audio cable, and you know, you solder the red wire, the black wire, and then the bare wire, and you know, you get it right, and you go throw it out, and you go use it and whatever. And when I got here, they said, you know, make us an XLR cable. And I said, fantastic. Let me do that for you right quick. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, I don't really know. You know, and they said, okay, well, we'll teach you.
What was different?
Well, I'll tell you. A lot of things I never really thought about. And, you know, I don't know how much of this is weathering kind of stuff. But we don't let any bare copper show in any of our cables when we make them. Everything is solder. And jacket, and then just as an extra piece of protection, and it doesn't matter any type of audio connection, any type of a solder connection is also sealed with heat shrink.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like today, if I wind up having to go do, news or something, my cables are certainly going to get wet, and nothing messes up a cable like rust.
Yeah.
And heat shrink, for me, the thing about heat shrink, and stuff looks so good when you put heat shrink on it, and not only does it look good, but a little stray wire from the drain wire from the shield, protects from that. And if something gets bent, you have a better chance of something that's not supposed to touch not touching.
Absolutely.
But you got to remember to put the heat shrink on before you put the whole connector together.
Oh, yeah.
How did you just have to forget it enough times, or are you just good at remembering?
Yeah, I had to forget it enough times. That's exactly. I tell you, nothing. You don't ever learn anything as good as you learn it until you've forgotten to do it several times. I'll tell you, you guys deal a lot with Ethernet cable?
Sure.
Let me tell you how many times you need to forget to put the boot on it before you start remembering every time to put the boot on it.
That's great. Robert, I want to thank you so much for being here on the show. I really appreciate it. It's been an hour well spent. I'm sorry Chris Tobin couldn't make it. I'm sure he'll be back with us next week. We'll also be doing a show from the Las Vegas, from the NAB show, also from Tuscany, the hotel where the Public Radio Engineering Conference will be going on. We'll be doing a show live from there as well. So we look forward to seeing you guys there, too. I'm Kirk Harnack. We've been at the folks at TNDV in Nashville, Tennessee. They check them on the web. They have a beautiful website, and you'll maybe find out plenty about TV remote trucks. They're absolutely beautiful. TNDV.com. And I appreciate them hosting me here today. Ah, yeah, there's the website right there, TNDV.com.
I know that guy.
Do you?
I do.
Is he trustworthy?
Oh, yeah, you can.
Okay.
He happens to be in our audio-only truck.
You have an audio-only truck?
Oh, yeah.
We should have been here. We could have looked at it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe someday we'll do it again.
Well, you gotta schedule it. Those things get booked.
Yeah, they do. I bet, yeah. But if I book it, it's going to cost me a lot of money.
We can work something out.
Okay.
We can work something out.
This has been This Week in Radio Tech. Our Robert Pace is our guest, and I'm Kirk Harnack. Suncast has been our producer again today. I appreciate Suncast for working through it with us and making us look good. And Andrew Zarian, the owner of the GFQ Network. Thanks to everybody, and we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.